If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Deuce and Mo. They tell you what they know. Deuce and Mo. The podcast that you know.
Hey, welcome into the Deuce and Mo podcast. First things first, thank you so much for supporting our content. We got a fun episode today. Before we move forward, if you're listening on Apple or Spotify, do us a huge favor. Give us a 5-star review. All it does is get more eyeballs and ears on our podcast. Today's episode, the draft is all over. We had a 2-day draft for the first time in NBA history. Day 2 started at 1 p.m. Pacific time, but the action got started early for the Sacramento Kings as they make a trade. We break that down, and later in the podcast, we catch up with Sean Cunningham, Kings reporter from Fox 40, as we talk about the trade, the draft, and what lies ahead for the Sacramento Kings. Enjoy the show. Well, the NBA draft is in the books, and the Kings were active. It started last night when the Sacramento Kings selected Devin Carter from Providence with the 13th pick, and we are left going, but they've got 800 guards here. They've got 8 guards. What are they going to do? Well, we find out early this afternoon, the Kings made a trade to deal with that a little bit. They get a trade done with the Toronto Raptors. They send Sasha Vezenkov, Davion Mitchell, the 45th pick in the draft to Toronto, along with a second round pick next year that is Portland. So, yeah, 2 second round picks, one that could be kind of high next year. Portland's not good again, along with Sasha, Davion Mitchell, and in return, the Kings get Jalen McDaniels. They get one player back who is on a $4.7 million expiring contract. So why did they do it?
Why?
Well, it clears an open spot on the roster, and in addition to that, gives the Kings some cap space to allow them to use it in a trade or in free agency. The reality of the situation is this. This trade is not about Jalen McDaniels today. I think they're taking a chance on Jalen.
Absolutely.
And I think there's a chance he's a part of what they do from a rotational standpoint. Maybe he gets in the mix and has a bounce back year. He's 6'9", a 7-foot wingspan. He's been around the league for a little bit, right? 26 years old, played in Charlotte, Philly, and last year in Toronto where he was not good. He had a bad year last year in Toronto. Only shot like 16% from three in his career, about 32% from three. But he's long, which is something the Kings need. They need athleticism. He has that too. But he's also on a $4.7 million expiring contract. Who knows what his future holds in Sacramento?
That's it. Low risk move in the sense of you are shedding your roster of another guard after drafting one the night before. You are trading someone in Sasha Vezenkov, who it felt like maybe things were getting even a little weird there at the end with all the reports like he wasn't happy. You want to make sure that he finds a space in the NBA, especially after all that work of coming all the way over here and changing his life as well. So a new opportunity for him. And then for someone like Davion Mitchell as well, just like we said, shedding the guard, but then also giving him another opportunity. Now, the two draft picks, one in this year's draft, one for next year, it feels like a lot for just getting one player in return. But I think the thing that you and I have been talking about all day, Deuce, is just really seeing, not necessarily the using the word desperate for the Kings to get rid of a guard to clear some cap space. But at the same time, that is what it kind of took to make this deal actually end up go through.
Something I said in the beginning of a stream today is the Kings offseason is, I think of it as a nice book, right? All right, you open up chapter one is getting Mike Brown's deal done. All right, let's go to chapter two. Anything good here? Oh, this is going to be the part where Malik leaves. No, Malik Monk stays. Oh, chapter three was last night, the NBA draft. There's a lot of trade talks. But the end of chapter three was drafting Devin Carter, 13th overall, an absolute dog. Who's going to help this team? But in the vacuum, if you're looking at that move in the vacuum, you're going, oh, no, they've got so many guards. Where does he fit in? I don't get this. Well, this was day one of the NBA draft. You go to day two, you go to the next chapter, and you talk about this trade. Now, even this trade in a vacuum, yeah, you clear a spot on a guard, whatever. To me, it's about what they do after that.
Yes.
What's in the next chapter? Is this used to make complete a significant move? Because in my opinion, it was a bit surprising that they had to attach a couple of draft picks, second round picks. I know they're second round picks, but Portland's could be high next year, like I said. Those seem valuable. And I think if you're making a move like that to clear space, you better be getting something impactful on the other side. As it stands right now, we don't know what's going to happen. But Monty McNair said last night after the draft, like, yeah, this is, we're aware of the roster things. We've got some work to do. Free agency starts Sunday. And this is transaction season. We'll see what lies ahead for Sacramento.
Yeah, and what lies ahead, I think even after they drafted Devin Carter, the first thing that we kept saying was, we really like Devin Carter. Excited for Devin Carter. Okay, another guard. What's the next move? How do you make it? Great. They started the domino effect, right? Where you're starting the process. This isn't what it's going to all look like when... It better not when obviously, well, it won't when the season starts. So, clearing that roster spot and everything, and just hoping that maybe they're actually going for a big fish, a tier one like player. Now, what would that mean? That they would be spending lots of money, but they would have some cap space to actually do that. They have more wiggle room to have different options. And that's what you want this team to have, is to have options, but also to execute something. Because the amount of times that we have talked about the almost trades with Alex Caruso, Kuzma, whoever else.
Siakam.
Thank you.
OG.
It just, you go down the list and you're like, okay, they have to make something happen. I don't know what it's going to be, but obviously that is what their plan is going to be.
We know some of the names out there. Brandon Ingram, Kyle Kuzma, could Paul George be one? That seems very unlikely, but there are some bigger names out there. Then you start thinking about other names who could help. Bobby Portis's name has been brought up as a trade, a guy who could be potentially traded. You're looking at free agents, maybe Obi Toppin, Jalen Smith from Indiana. John Collins, is that a trade target from Utah? There are some possibilities. So today was more about opening up that space. Now, let's not get it twisted. This is also kind of a day you look back and go, man, what could have been? I mean, Davion Mitchell was a lottery pick, right? Like, this was a player that when you drafted him, you obviously have high hopes for. They drafted him to a team that already had De'Aaron Fox and Tyrese Halliburton. So it was a little puzzling at the time. I love this for Davion. Davion is one of my favorite guys because he is a great person. He plays his ass off.
Yep.
And he's worked really hard. I think the one thing I've said a long time about Davion is I think he just gets better the more he plays. In this situation, behind De'Aaron Fox and when they have Malik Monk, like, there wasn't a ton of time for him. And when he got more minutes late last year, he looked more comfortable. He played some of his best basketball. He worked on his three-point shot. He was lethal from the corner three last year. And now he's going to get an opportunity to go to Toronto and get a fresh start. So I am personally, I'm happy for him.
So happy for him. I feel that same way about Davion. When you see this happen to a good person, you know, not just someone who works so hard, you love his mentality and you love his growth even. You love when an opportunity, a new role can come to life for someone that is such a good person. So for Davion, I'm excited for that for him, and to maybe be able to showcase his talent a little bit more in bigger opportunities, maybe some bigger minutes, who knows. So yeah, that's first and foremost. It was great. I loved having him here. I know I saw some people today being like, off night will always be a king. And it's just, it's sweet how I think a lot of people really respected the way that he was a dog out there and left it all on the floor every single night.
And then with Sasha Vezenkov, another guy that you go, man, you think about last year, we were doing live streams watching some of his EuroLeague playoff games. And there was an immense level of excitement about Sasha coming to Sacramento. He won the EuroLeague MVP. But the Kings also, like, they put resources into trying to get him. Not only did they bring him over, he decided to come over, of course, and give him a deal. But they went over there multiple times throughout the year before signing him to go see him play, to meet with him. Like, they put a full court press on this guy, hoping that he was going to be a very impactful player for the Sacramento Kings. It didn't work out. And we've spent time talking about Sasha's time in Sacramento, Morgan. There's, I feel like, a lot of layers to it. It felt like initially there was maybe just the adjustment to a new league.
Yep.
One, right? I think two. Not having the full trust of Mike Brown, some of the defensive shortcomings as Mike Brown was trying to get his team to play better defense. There was the adjustment for Sasha, not only to the NBA game, but just with his own athleticism too. Oh. And then you get to the other factor when it seemed like he was like coming out
that
of, you know, maybe learning a little more about the game, getting more comfortable. He got hurt and then he gets hurt again. And so I'm left going, I don't know what to make of Sasha's time in Sacramento. It felt like he could have played more, and then he gets hurt, and then you're left going, yeah, I don't know if he's going to be a good NBA player or not, because I didn't see enough. All I know is when he was out there, he brought energy.
Yeah.
There's a life when he checked into the game. He moved the ball. He shot the ball well from three. And defensively, he still did some nice things, even though he was the greatest athlete.
And when he was on the bench, he still had a smile on his face, was rooting on his teammates. Yeah. And I know that we had a few interactions with him, and just a really, really another sweet guy, good person, that always seemed like he just carried his head held high and was always working hard to adapt to the NBA game. And so when you did see those flashes, it made you believe, ooh, well, he's a smart enough player to use his wingspan and get his hands in the passing lane. He always has his arms up. This is great. Ooh, okay. He's understanding where he's feeling more comfortable from three and when he needs to actually shoot the ball and not hesitate, all these different things. Again, like you said, it wasn't working out here. And the fact that the Kings cut the cord right away, as soon as some of those rumblings came out, and they probably had some conversations and were like, we want you to still live your life in the NBA. Here you go.
Also, the Raptors front office, that group led by Masai Ujiri, you SOB.
Why?
Somehow getting two picks out of that, taking on those guys.
Gotta do what you gotta do.
He got the better players in the deal and gets more picks, and then gives up Jalen McDaniels. And he's like, oh, Kings, you want cap space? Well, make it worth my time. Make it worth it for me if I'm taking on these guys. I'll go ahead and wait. You go ahead. Anyway, I also think, I know this is probably not the most fair way to look at this deal.
What?
But I look at what the Kings need, right? From an athleticism length standpoint, what they're looking at going forward. Jalen, if he's here, like 6'9", 7 foot wingspan, athletic, much more athletic in the so defensive long. Presence compared to Sasha, right? Davion, Devin Carter adds a little more than Davion, and that's fair to say. And I like Davion a lot, but you think about Devin Carter's athleticism.
Yep. His versatility. His size.
He's just bigger, right? Like, you look at the height and you're like, oh, that's not that big of a difference. Yeah, one has like a 6'2 and a half wingspan. The other 6'8 and three quarter wingspan with a 42-inch vert who's set the NBA combine record on the three quarter sprint with like 2.87 seconds. And then defensively can guard multiple positions. So, like, if you look at the additions made, subtractions, you go, okay, I think they got a little better in areas they needed to.
Absolutely. I mean, how many times did we talk about leading up to the draft even? Okay, Kings really need to see some length. Look at how many of their flaws were exposed against the Pelicans, losing to them six times last season. And a lot of it had to do with length. And then with other teams, a lot of it had to do with length. So, you know, no matter what happens with McDaniels, either way, like we said, the low risk with the contract alone, maybe you can try and help him become the type of player that you want on the floor, so he's not a liability on one end of the floor.
And we've seen the flashes from him. And by the way, his brother is Jaden McDaniels, who plays for the Minnesota Wolves. So it's going to be interesting to see where the Kings go next, right? Because they did give up some assets there to make that happen. And it gives Sasha Davion a fresh start. And now the Kings move forward. I think this is about the next move. Like, what's going to be the next move for the Sacramento Kings? Because they still have other weaknesses. We just learned now that the draft is over. The Kings did sign a player to a two-way contract. Someone who is projected to be a second-round pick. They have agreed to a deal with Isaiah Crawford, who is a forward from Louisiana Tech. He played 5 years at Louisiana Tech. He is 22 years old, 6'5", 215 pounds, and I'm going to give you Sam Vecini's scouting report on him.
Thank
Sam
you.
Vecini from The Athletic does an amazing job. So we are just learning this as we are recording this right now, so I'll go ahead and give you this breakdown. Crawford has monster measurements for an NBA wing, 6'5 and a quarter without shoes, with a 7'5 wingspan.
We love those wingspans!
And a huge 8'9 standing reach. He also has enormous hands. Morgan size hands.
Yeah, I was going to say.
He's 215 pounds. He covers ground across the court with long strides. He's a coordinated and balanced player who's flexible laterally and quite strong. Crawford is a winner. He has a complete game that plays well off the ball on offense. He's impactful on defense, making all the extra effort plays his teams hope to see. He plays hard and sees the court extremely well. He understands and reacts well to the space around him. Before I continue on, last season for Louisiana Tech, he averaged 16 points a game, 6 rebounds, 2.4 assists, 2.5 turnovers, 1.7 blocks, 2 steals, 48.5% shooting, 41% from three-point land. The year before that, 42% from three-point land. He wasn't his third year at Louisiana Tech. He dealt with an injury because he only played 3 games.
Yeah.
So he responded well from that and played 32 in back-to-back years.
Love it. Love it.
I'll continue on. The defense is his calling card in the NBA, according to Sam Vecini.
Yeah.
Here's his breakdown. Though he's not fast, he covers a lot of ground with his length and his long strides. He's active and engaged on that end. He's very balanced with his footwork, never taking extra choppy steps. He's best off the ball on defense. That's where his primary impact will come into play. He's awesome when rotating.
Okay.
You like what you're hearing?
Oh, yeah.
He communicates well with his teammates and moves well all over the court, closes out exceptionally, and is great in help situations. Beyond that, he was a monster playmaker at Louisiana Tech, averaging 2.1 steals a game, 1.9 as a junior. His hands were consistently in the passing lanes, and he's not a huge gambler, but frequently gets his hands on balls anyway with the timely digs and early anticipatory rotations.
Wow.
He also figured out how to bait ball handlers into making poor passes on the perimeter because they would misjudge his length, which often resulted in a steal. Also blocked 1.7 per game because he's a terrific rotational threat from the opposite side of the court. He's a good on-ball defender. Offensively, you're probably wondering.
I'm totally wondering.
Yeah, he played a point forward style four-man for Louisiana Tech. He would bring the ball up on the court, regularly, but also played off the ball on the wing at times. He's a patient driver. He can use his frame to get to his spots. Says he has some concerns about how that skill will translate to the NBA. The weaknesses, saying he is a below average athlete by NBA wings. He's not quick. I think his first step and first stride can be slow, even if he's flexible.
Okay.
Says his percentages, touch, and mechanics as a shooter are good, but in terms of NBA translation, it's worrying. that he's not a high volume shooter. Oh. His release takes a long time to develop because he brings the ball up slowly.
No.
That extended to all levels of shooting, both on the turnarounds he take after getting cut off on his drives and the threes he take off the catch. He's not always prepared to shoot when he gets the ball since he projects as a 3-and-D player at the NBA level. He must speed up that motion and become a high volume shooter.
Okay.
Finally, he lacks some foot speed on defense. Players occasionally drove past him in a straight line. Crawford can get his body onto someone and then use his length to recover on plays. But those margins are close in the NBA. So his summary said, I love the idea of Crawford.
Yeah.
And I love Crawford's tape, especially on defense, more than I loved him as a prospect. I am confident Crawford will be capable of defending at an NBA level and could be an impact player on that end with his work away from the ball. His frame is tremendous for an NBA wing, and he should be able to guard multiple different players.
Okay.
There are a couple of potential pitfalls for a player who will turn 23 early in his first season. Throw in the multiple ACL tears on top of that, and I don't see a first-round grade for Crawford. It would be tough for me to give him a guaranteed multi-year contract, but I would buy a team drafting him in the second round and giving him a two-way contract.
Which is what happened.
So there is Sam Vecenie talking about Isaiah Crawford. Does amazing work for The Athletic. So Isaiah gets a two-way contract with the Sacramento Kings. Of course, every NBA team gets three two-way deals, and then none of them are guaranteed.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Cool. I like it. I mean, again, it, especially when you hear what you do like about a player, you never want to get too excited when it's a second rounder or a two-way guy or anything, just because they could still be a good basketball player, but it never actually translates to the NBA level, right? And so it's just something I always keep in mind because I always want to get excited. There's always going to be hope there when these kind of situations happen, but it's definitely a wait and see.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Let's get more on this trade and what happened on draft night. Checking in with a guy who's been covering the Sacramento Kings for what seems like 39 billion years. He's from Fox 40, the Kings Beat podcast. The one and only Sean Cunningham. First things first, let's talk about the Kings making a trade today. With the Toronto Raptors, you confirmed and you had the details of this, where the Sacramento Kings are sending Sasha, Davion, the 45th pick today in the draft, along with the second round pick next year that was Portland's, to Toronto for Jalen McDaniels, who was on an expiring contract. What's your breakdown? What's your reaction to this move by the Sacramento Kings? Because I feel like there's some layers to this.
Yeah, I think there's several layers. I think when you saw what they picked yesterday in Devin Carter and you realized kind of the roster makeup, you go, okay, well, you got plenty of offseason left to kind of make this all work. And I think people were thinking, hey, they're going to make a trade and, you know, they're going to make a move. And then you hear from Monty McNair yesterday. And I think some of the comments that he had were, you know, pretty strong in the sense of, you kind of got a glimpse into what they're doing. He wants people to know that, hey, that's the first day of the off season where you can really start to change the makeup of your team. And it's not the only day, but also that, like, he had some pretty solid comments around Sasha Vezenkov and wanting to necessarily, you know, hopefully see him in Sacramento in a way, acknowledging it that, you know, anything can happen during an off season. So kind of a long-winded way to say that, like, you know, less than 24 hours later, here you are, and Sasha and Davion are heading out to Toronto. So, you know, when this team is, they want to be aggressive. I don't think that, I think they're certainly targeting a few things, obviously creating roster space, trying, you know, the aprons and luxury tax and all those things are tricky to navigate. And this is kind of the first year they're really doing that, especially with the way luxury tax and some of those things come into play. The other part of that is you've got two players that are a little, I don't want to say disgruntled, one probably disgruntled with, I mean, he voiced it as much. And I think Davion would just kind of be more chalked up to victim of circumstance, and certainly some of the players around him and in the type of style that they want to play. And, you know, he had a little bit of an up and down season last year. So a little bit of odd man out scenarios for Sacramento. But also the other layer is Sacramento needs to get longer, and they didn't do that last night, even though they have a player in Devin Carter who tends to play bigger than what he is. And for people who don't know, I mean, you're talking about a guy with a 6'10 wingspan at 6'2. And
Sean's giving him another inch and a half.
I like
but
it.
I kind of, you know what, by Sunday, I'm gonna be like, this guy's got a 7'3 wingspan.
Yeah.
I think it's like 6'8¾, but it doesn't matter. He is definitely long for his position.
Yeah. It's funny because P3 down in SoCal, they have him at 6'10. I know the combine had it at 6'9 and some change. So I think P3 is what kind of rounded up. So I'll round up because
interesting.
It's in the best interest of the player, maybe. Yeah, but either way, I mean, this guy tends to rebound like Josh Hart, and I think that's something that they feel can play and translate into the NBA level from, especially from college. But more to the point, I mean, they're trying to still identify size, athleticism, and you can argue that, you know, Jalen McDaniels had a terrible season, and you'd be right, because he was awful last year. You just look at those numbers, you watch him play, it wasn't good. But on the flip side of that, like, I think most people are level-headed enough to know there's still a lot of offseason left, and if you're waiting for another shoe to drop, you should be, because you'd only make a move like that where you're sending a lot of capital out to hopefully strike while the iron is hot and be able to capitalize. And now you're what, a little over 15 million below, or maybe it's 14 million below the first apron in terms of luxury tax. You've got a roster spot that's open, and, you know, your calculus changes. So you can kind of see what they're doing, and, you know, it was kind of neat to see Jalen Daniels' reaction. I don't know if you guys saw that.
We saw that. It was.
I felt like, was that real?
Yes,
like,
but it was real.
Do you think he was truly finding out in that moment, or was he doing a bit?
No, he was finding out in the moment.
That's amazing.
He might have been doing a bit. Yeah. I will say this: like, I wanted to see if the video was kind of true, and maybe, you know, let's make sure this video, one, isn't AI in these days.
Yeah.
Two, isn't something from like a year ago, or even 6 months ago, or even a week ago. And yeah, to see where he's kind of working out and doing a little digging. I posted the video of where from the source where it actually came from. Ooh. And this, if you look at his story, I mean, he's working out with Jalen and has a history with Jalen. And so, yeah, I'd venture to say that that's pretty legit.
So we were all under the impression, especially after last night when Devin Carter was drafted, that things were going to change. Tweaks were going to be made. And we saw something happen today, which, kind of like you said, it seems like maybe there's going to be something bigger that happens. And there needs to be. But are we thinking the size is going to be like a tier one player? Are you thinking the size is going to be like tier three, like Bobby Portis, Obi Toppin? Like, where are you feeling like the Kings' pulses right now with what type of player they're looking for?
Well, I would, if it were me, and just things that I've, you know, I think there's a lot of chatter around, you know, wanting to add as much length as possible. I mean, I think Monty gave you a little glimpse last night of the type of players they're looking for. I mean, obviously two-way player importance is kind of paramount for this team. So if you can get that, you want to be able to do it without sacrificing on the other end. And you know, Jalen kind of flies a little bit in the face of that because offensively he's not the most gifted player, but certainly athletic and does have some defensive upside. But I would say for what they're looking going forward, and, you know, people ask me a lot, like, what's their area of need? And I say all the time, a two-way wing that can score and likely be one of their best three players on the team, in addition to maybe a secondary player that's rim protection. So to me, those are still the biggest areas of need on this team. So I would categorize it as a tier one. I mean, I think you go out there and you try to find that tier one player because clearly this team isn't good enough. And it's not like, you know, I kind of used the Knicks as an example the other day because you see what they're doing. And, you know, the reason that they use five first round picks, which I don't care where they at, that's a lot for a guy in like Mikal Bridges, who's 28 and hasn't been an all-star. But even despite the fact they still have draft picks that are still available to them, and they could probably go out and trade the likes of Julius Randle and probably acquire some more draft picks. If you contrast that with some team like Washington or New Orleans, and I'm talking about Kyle Kuzma and Brandon Ingram in this circumstance, you know, the asks of those players compared to where those teams are at, like, are first round picks really that desirable to New Orleans if they're trying to be a win now team versus Washington, where they would love a slew of first round picks because they're not an equation. They're not in the equation at all. So anything's on the table for them. So I think it's interesting. You have a team like New York and New Orleans who are in this win now mode and might be willing to sacrifice whatever to get there.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see how this plays out because on the surface, I'm looking at the trade and I'm like, look, you're giving Sasha a new opportunity. It didn't work out. But this was a miss by this front office, right? Like they put a lot of resources into trying to get him to come over. He came over. They thought he was going to be a big part of the team. Whatever. They decide to move on, send him to Toronto, allow him to get some run. Davion, a lottery pick. When you had Halliburton and Fox, okay, you know, you're giving him an opportunity now to go do something. I was surprised that they had to attach 2 seconds to this deal to get it done. And you get Jalen McDaniels back. You take a flyer on him. And, yeah, maybe he's on the team. He's got a $4.7 million deal. It's expiring. Maybe he's used in another trade. So this has to lead to something big. I feel like this wasn't moved just to, like, hey, we just wanted the cap space. And I want a shot at Jalen McDaniels. This has to be because they view something bigger happening this offseason.
Yeah, I mean, I would expect that. And to that point, to say that it's a miss on Sasha, certainly, you know. And maybe it got to the point where, you know, it's like, all right, change of scenery, whatever. The reality is, you know, they're not in a position to really be able to develop. And I'm not making an excuse for them. I do think it's a miss on their end. But at the same time, like, if it does lead to something, it leads to something. If there's a guy that doesn't want to be here, you know, then maybe it got to a point where, you know, it was unsalvageable. You heard Monty last night say, no, you know, I think you could be here, but you have to trade. You have to, yep, you know, spend money to make money. And I think, you know, to look at this trade individually, it's one of the first times. I'm trying to think of others that come to mind maybe where, you know, I think this front office has been very, cautious. I mean, they have swung for the fences clearly with the Tyrese Halliburton move for Domantas Sabonis. And I think that certainly benefited both teams. If you had to pick a winner, like maybe you'd give it to Tyrese Halliburton because they've gone deeper into, you know, they've had some more of the success with Indiana. It led to Pascal Siakam. I mean, they just have some flexibility there, and the Kings fell to ninth in the next year. So even though they're only two wins less, but one's in the East, one's in the West, you put Indiana in the West might look a little different, but regardless, if you want to say that they won, but typically the Kings are the ones getting the better end of this of trades that we've seen when in this front office era. And I mean, it's pretty clear right now, at least on the surface for this trade, they're not getting the best player in the deal.
That and I mean, you think about two future draft picks as well attached to this. And I think the thing that I kept pushing back to Deuce, because Deuce is like, gosh, this seems expensive. And I go, yeah, it seems a little desperate though. They're trying to find a way to shed a guard. They have eight.
And shed salary.
And shed salary. But I think about how they have those, how they had eight guards on this roster, and like, what's the best way to do that? Well, sometimes maybe you get a little desperate and you have to pay up and do what you need to do, even if it means giving up a little bit more of your future with those future draft picks. But do you think that's just kind of the direction the Kings are going to have to go when trying to make some of these deals coming up now, is just really possibly mortgaging some of their future?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's every team. I don't think it's necessarily just Sacramento. I think you look at, you know, if you free up $14 million under the first apron, how many teams can say that they're at that? And that's kind of a weapon in your arsenal. That's something that's now an asset in your bank if you go out and you're trying to establish your roster for next season. And I think that really, you know, it's important to remind people that it's like we're sitting here midway through the second round of the NBA draft, and we're still a long, long ways off from the start of the season. So we're all reactionary. We want to, you know, say who won the trade already, and it's for sure. But I think it's whether there's a big splash that's made, another, you know, small ripple in a pool, whatever it is, there's still going to be players that are added to this roster for next season regardless. They have roster spots open. There's plenty of time to make moves, and you know, it doesn't just have to happen at the draft. I always argue that it doesn't have to happen at the trade deadline during the season. There's so many different ways for teams to get better. So I think what I said last night, which is, I think the Kings had a winning night. I think they walked away with a winning player. They added to their roster, and people are confused, like, oh, what does it all mean? And then the next day you've got some roster spots that open up and some more confusion that comes out of it. It's like, it's not a finished product yet. And what this front office will always argue is it never really is. It's always this evolving thing. So what I tell people is just don't fall in love with any player. Enjoy the moment, live in the moment. You can always try to, you know, project out what weeks from now, days from now, and even years from now look like. But the reality is if you've lived in Sacramento, you've rooted for this team long enough that you know that change is the only thing that's constant.
Yeah, and we talked about this right after the trade, because you're right. We always view, at least initially, we always view it in a vacuum. They got Devin Carter, but they have eight guards. Oh, what does this mean? Well, this is the start of it. Or today, this trade, this is all they got back. Well, what are they doing? Well, you would think more is coming. I am eager to see what the more is. You know, they've been attached to Kuzma for so long, but I don't know anything. I just feel like the Wizards are probably asking for a shit ton for Kyle Kuzma. And I think the Kings aren't willing to give up what they want for Kuzma. I think if the Kings are taking a swing, it's going to be at someone that is who they believe more of a star value than Kyle Kuzma. I think they like Kuzma, but is it worth giving up multiple first round picks for Kyle Kuzma? That's a tough one, especially if you're looking at 28 or 30 when you don't even know who's on your roster at that point, and you're mortgaging for Kuzma. What's your ceiling there? Whereas maybe you're more open-minded if it's a guy, I don't know, I'm just throwing this out there because we're having fun, is like, hey, Paul George decides he wants to sign with you and you can work out a sign a trade. And you know what? He's old, but he's got star qualities. We want to take a swing at that.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the other thing. It's like, if you look at Washington, for example, and you're looking at Kuzma, I mean, he has such a friendly contract. I mean, for someone of his talent, and you know, they've got, it's no secret, the Kings went after him before during that Buddy Hield trade that fell apart, the three-way with LA. And I if you're Washington, I can't help but agree with them. If they're asking a lot for him, and you've seen what other players have gotten, he's a if you're Washington and you're stepping into next year with Kyle Kuzma, good. Like, you're fine. There's other ways for them to make it, especially with his contract and how it declines each year. That's very, very team friendly. But to your point about, like, to me, it's always the ones that you're not hearing the most chatter about. And that's why I always kind of caution fans. It's like, yeah, you're hearing reports, you're hearing rumors. A lot of those don't tend to come true, right? And you weren't hearing about Domantas Sabonis, I mean, a little bit, but certainly not with Sacramento, you know? And Tyrese Halliburton, and I always joke, it's like, literally, I sat down with him the day before he got traded.
That's right. You know, the organization. Tyrese and Davion sat down to do like an interview about like, oh, the young guards here and the promise. The next day he was traded.
Yeah. 3 days before the trade deadline, we do the interview. 2 days before the, or a day before the deadline, Yeah, I forget. It was 2 days before the deadline. Yeah, literally said, don't trade him now. Just don't trade him. Don't ruin my story, which they did. And it was fine. I love the interview. But yeah, both those guys are now gone. So it was funny. I was going back through some photos. It's like you forget, like, Namias Keita was also in that draft with Davion Mitchell, and both of those guys are gone now. So a lot of these, a lot of these people within that they've traded, they've used as assets. And to their credit, you know, you think about how Davion got to Sacramento. It was kind of a tumble in the draft. I think some people thought he'd go a little higher. Same thing with Tyrese Haliburton for sure.
Yep.
And then here you are with Devin Carter. I thought for sure would have been a top 10 pick. I didn't think there was any chance he'd be there at 13. And so I was also shocked, but I also didn't think, you know, not to say that I'm an expert or anything, but I think the biggest shock to me out of the last night was Dalton Knecht falling down to the Lakers and seeing that he could have been available for Sacramento. And I think that's where it gets fans going. Wow. They look at area of need and it's like, this guy looks like he would be a perfect wing, be able scoring option, all that stuff. He fits that mold of being kind of a 22, 23 year old player, a little older than some of the other. I think he's on the older side of those players because he's 23, but like, then they go with a guy who's smaller. Well, and it simply just comes down to best player available. And I think Monty McNair talked about, you don't draft for the now, you draft for the future. And that's what they did. And that's what I'm saying. If they always have like three star point guards, a lot of teams will still grab a point guard if they still think that it's the best player available in that draft. But you look at free agency, man, you look at these trade scenarios and things like that, like going with a player like Carter, I think is like it's a crossroad moment. You know, you might think you're on one path, but the minute you do something else, everything changes. It can change the way you look at your team. The whole calculus that you project for the future could change. And that obviously I think happened today. I also think that, you know, if you're looking at somebody like a Kuzma and an Ingram and somebody in that kind of type of role or type of fit, you know, what they do going forward will kind of shift them for maybe what they projected one way 2 years from now, month from now, whatever. Every move tends to have a ripple effect throughout your roster, and your calculus certainly changes.
I really like the Devin Carter pick, and I know on the servers when people saw guard, it made some fans like, what? I don't know. But man, he is, like you said, he is long. What he can do defensively, such an explosive athlete. He's almost like exactly the type of player you want. Obviously, it'd be a little different if he was like 6'8 with a 7'3 wingspan. Obviously. You're like, oh my God, this would be the perfect. It's not from a positional standpoint the most perfect fit for Sacramento. But once they clear some things up, I feel like he's playing. Like, he's going to be out there. But he's exactly the type of player Mike Brown would want. Someone who's going to contest shots, play hard, steals, blocks, attacks the rim. He's efficient at the rims. Almost 66% at the rim last year at Providence. The rebounding, almost 9 rebounds a game. The more you watch him, it's like, oh, this is a guy that any NBA team would love to have on their roster. And I think he's going to be able to play right away.
Yeah, I'm not saying he plays like this player, but this is what it reminded me of because, look, if you were watching college basketball last year or you're a fan of college basketball at all, really for the past 2 years, I mean, Devin Carter was kind of a household name. You knew who he was, and that really says something coming from Providence because you don't really, I mean, with respect to that college, you're not really thinking of them as these perennial winners every single year. But to have a player who makes that type of impact on the national stage in a college in 2 years of college, especially the jump he took leaving South Carolina, which, you know, you could argue was probably a better program, but he goes to be a better fit with Providence and really leap out on the national stage. And it reminds me in a way of, you know, I know it was only 1 year, but Ja Morant goes to Murray State. When are you talking about Murray State? You're never talking about Murray State. The only reason you're talking about Murray State is because of Ja Morant. So I'm not saying that they're similar in skill or anything like that, but from him being in the ether and knowing about who this guy is, like if you were watching college basketball, especially last year, you knew who the hell he was, especially when he's being the Big East Player of the Year. So, I mean, it's a type of style to me that certainly translates. And the thing that like floored me watching him take shots so far, not like, he's not like the greatest three-point shooter. I don't want to like paint him that way, but he also doesn't take shots from the college line.
No.
Like, he's beyond the college
he's
line
doing it from
a
like,
lot.
He's doing it from, like, the logo, the advertisement logo sometimes when he's pulling up from three.
And he has such a high release, you guys. I mean, that's the other thing to me, that sometimes when a player might be on the shorter side of things, if you want to call that at 6'2", but like the way where his release is, whether it's all the way from the outside or next to the basket, it's very high.
The other thing I want to add to that too, Morgan, is he was the primary guy at Providence. All the attention was on him. He's taking contested stuff. The looks are going to be different. Of course, it's going to be different. He's not going to have the ball in his hands all the time either in Sacramento, but he'll get some open looks from three. So I think he'll get some cleaner looks, and he improved his three-point percentage to 37.7% last year, the free throw percentage up to just under 75% at the free throw line for him last year. So I'm not too concerned about the three-point shot because I think he'll get some clean looks.
Yeah, I agree. And it was interesting hearing him talk about, like, his Morgan, you mentioned his shot. And, yeah, it looks a little different.
Yeah.
But I love the way he talked. I mean, he's not looking to change it at all. He's like, hey, it goes in. And there's a little comparison there to, like, someone like Tyrese Halliburton, who had this, like, awkward-looking shot, still does, but is able to still get it off rather quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And I think hearing him talk about not being this shot taker, but more of a shot maker, and really putting an emphasis on efficiency, especially from an offensive standpoint, was like refreshing. Like, this guy gets it. Like, I wish you could say that every player you get on a team that you hunt for is a competitor, because that should just be part of their DNA, but it's certainly not. And you can see that you can see that in the NBA. There's guys that just get comfortable, certainly competitive maybe within the moment, but they don't eat, leave, die basketball. And this guy kind of falls under that category of somebody who just is a absolute competitor. And I think there's probably having an NBA father, and Anthony Carter is probably something you can attribute that to. But, I'd also argue, like, his dad hasn't really been around a lot. Only because he's working. I mean, he's assistant coach in Memphis with the Grizzlies. So they've been away from each other more than they've been with each other. And so, the nomadic lifestyle of the NBA, you have him maybe under your wing when you're a young guy, when you're a young kid, when he was just leaving the NBA or maybe still as a player. But certainly, like, he's been positioned, and he went to like three high schools. I mean, three high school situations coming out of Florida. I think his last year was in, I'm trying to remember, I saw this last night, but it was in New Hampshire, I believe. So an academy up in New Hampshire. So it's some just interesting things, like, to see him be put. I mean, it's like he was seriously kind of built for this in a way.
Don't worry.
Sean, and I'm sorry I distracted you too.
Yeah.
We had some weird camera thing going on and we just froze again. And now I had to like restart the camera, but we could hear you.
Our screen just freezes, and Deuce is going to murder the new PC that
Look
we got.
That.
I know, but he's good and quick at like trying to get this back going. So I'm going to continue as he crops this out and everything, because there's a point that I had. Oh, that's what I was going to ask. So, okay. So all of us, I like that we're all kind of on the same boat about Devin Carter, his game, what he can add in so many different aspects of his game. Monty McNair talking about how many Devin Carters there were out there in the postseason, that just like, that's the style of player that you need. Now, my question to you is, though, there's still a lot of guards on this roster. What does this mean for someone like Colby Jones or even Keon Ellis? Like, is it just like a wait and see thing for us? What is it?
Yeah, I think that's something that they'll answer pretty soon, because you have a lot of offseason left. I think, Colby Jones is certainly going to play in summer league, see what kind of steps he's made. That with respect, and I don't mean this as a slam on either one of those guys, but just to paint a picture for you, you drafted Devin Carter with the 13th pick, right? Colby Jones is a second round pick who's probably, he has a nice skill set, didn't really get a lot of team, but you could say he's fortunate. They saw something in him in a second rounder and gave him an NBA contract, not a two-way deal. And then with Keon Ellis, who has had quite a path. I mean, it's a tremendous, tremendous story. He gets to play last year after being a second round pick, then a two-way player, someone who's very young. And let's be honest, like, I always hear, I do a podcast with a buddy of ours who talks about, Monty McNair, this front office, they only want players that are like 22 years old. It's like, well, Keon Ellis legitimately flies in the face of that. And they developed him. And he's now on a stage where some people are looking at him as if he could possibly be a starter in this league.
Yeah. Yep.
And get it. So what do? They reward him with a deal that's very team friendly, obviously. But given his pathway, it's not like you could sign him to a $10, $15 million a year deal. You don't have to. You've got control over him. But those, especially with Keon Ellis, like, you could argue he's never going to have more value than he does right now.
Yeah.
You know, or their team salivating over him. You have to look at him as a commodity. But I'd also say I would factor him into this team's future as well. Currently, he'll be a little bit on the outskirts there. I don't know. I mean, if it wouldn't surprise me if neither one of those guys were on this team next year, to be honest. And I'm not saying that to be mean. I'm not saying that because they haven't earned roster spots or anything like that, but everybody's fluid. There's no untouchable player. You guys hear me talk about that all the time.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, there's what does it mean for them? I think it's just they continue to do what they do. And if they find themselves on another team, then so be it. But this team is going to be this continuing evolution of things. And that's why you can't get too, you know, it's like, oh, this great player. And, you know, Malik Monk is back. What is that? How's that trickle down to affecting someone like Keon Ellis, Kevin Huerter?
Yeah.
Even though Kevin Huerter has been in trade rumors since the moment he got here, coming off his worst season with the Kings and arguably in the NBA, makes him attached to rumors all the time, because certainly fans will look at it and go, well, they got to get rid of him. play Keon Ellis because he's on this upswing, right?
Yeah.
So how different do you think things look like at this point? I don't know. What's the June 27th? Let's just say like 2 weeks from now.
Ooh.
Do you think this team looks a lot different?
A lot different? Yeah, I mean, because if you're moving, let's say four players are gone, or you have four new players, to me that's a lot different.
I agree.
You know, does it look dramatically different? No, because I still think the core, and when I say about the core, I mean, you know, obviously the Fox, Domas, Malik, Murray, I don't know. I would say probably, but yeah, I'd say the core is still intact. So I don't think it's going to look dramatically different, but certainly I think this team will look quite different. And what'll be interesting to see is, will this team look dramatically different going into next season? Because obviously you've got some free agency around, you're going to have some decisions made on some players that, you know, aren't, whether they're going to be here or not, but I don't know that this team is going to be all that aggressive in free agency. To me, I think where this team, and it's always been this way, I think where this team makes its biggest impacts are through trades. And that's where they're going to have to go out and I think continue to make their biggest impact is through the trade market.
Can't wait to see how it plays
out. I know, I know.
Sean, thanks for hanging out with us for a bit. And thanks for dealing with the technical stuff, all that stuff. Appreciate you making some time. I know you're busy and we always appreciate talking to you.
Seriously.
Well, the offseason is just getting started. More trades can happen. NBA free agency starts Sunday. We will have you covered. We love you guys, but we gots to go.
Deuce and Mo, Deuce and Mo, Deuce and Mo. They tell you what they know. Deuce and Mo, Deuce and Mo, Deuce and Mo. The podcast that you know. Deuce and Mo.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the markable fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time.
Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.